right, and it is Father's Day. I mean, and it finally dawned on me. I mean, when I was planning these things out way back here, and I had three ideas of what I was going to do here, it never dawned on me then that it was Father's Day. And so I came down to this day and realized, or I mean this week, and realized, you know, that isn't going to fly. I need to somehow rethink this thing and do something that at least has Father show up in it somewhere, you know. And what I was planning didn't. So I changed that. But it is Father's Day, and on our way over here, we stopped and got coffee, and on our way out, you know, there's these two gals working there, and on our way out, we, you know, we said, Happy Father's Day to you, and we got these blank stares. And then it finally registered on the, oh, yeah, Father's Day. And it was, you know, okay, it's good to come up to sync with this, because someday, or some part of the day here, you're probably going to want to say something to somebody or something like that. So Father's Day, you know, it's changed a lot for me over the years. I mean, right now it's a different thing from what it was back a ways. All my father figures in my life are no longer alive. My father, my birth father, my stepfather, my father-in-law, they're all people who are gone now. And so that's changed. But then it's also this idea that I'm a bit older now and my kids are grown kids. It's different from what it was. When they were little, you know, we had this big deal go on Father's Day and you know, breakfast in bed, and they would kind of, you know, there'd be all this kind of fun stuff going on in the cards, and, you know, it's just kind of fun little thing. But now they're grown, and so it all takes on a different nature to it, and, you know, it's a different thing. On our way over here, one of the things we did was we just kind of talked a little bit about those father figures that we've had in our lives and kind of how they played into us and, you know, what kind of lasting impact they had on us. You know, with this in mind, this whole idea of Father's Day and kind of rethinking what we would do this morning, over this past week there were some times where I kind of just thought back on my own experience of being a father. And, you know, going all the way back to when our first child was born and what that was like to kind of first meet that first child. You know, and to hold that little girl in my arms and kind of dream out ahead, you know, who she would become, and that experience that until you've been there you don't know, but you can kind of imagine that intense love for this person and longing for her to experience all that life had for her and to be the person that God intended for her to be in all the ways that would show up. Then we had two other children as well, so we have three children. That longing that they would grow to be people who were fully functioning in this world and were successful in life. And as a father, that role that I've had over the years of trying to somehow be a part of that, them experiencing that. And even now as they are adults, that's still a desire in my heart. That they would experience life in its fullest. Not just in the physical sense of the life that anyone has, but also in their spiritual life. Wanting them not to miss out on anything, but to fully experience that. And that intense love for them, mainly because they're my children. There's a different thing with that. And that love for them, that longing for them. In the scriptures, we find an account where Paul talks about this same kind of thing. This parenting type of ministry that he had. And this longing that he had, kind of as a spiritual parent, for those that he had a part of their life, and his desire for them not to miss out on anything. Now, you've got your Bibles with you somewhere, right? Take a look at 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians. The beginning of this letter that he wrote to these Greek believers, he describes the ministry that he had with them. and describes what his goal was in this thing. I mean, he had done some fascinating things with them in ministry, but are you there yet? Okay, good. You must be, because I don't hear the pages turning. So you're kind of there. Okay. It comes to this point where he describes, okay, he had this ministry going on, and it all comes down to this, he says. You know, if you look at chapter 2, verse 12, the ministry he had was so that, you see this? So that you would walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. So this is what it was all about. So that you would end up living a life that was worthy, at least that's the term that's used here, worthy of the God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. God invites us into something that he has designed for us, his kingdom and his own glory, and says, I want you to be fully functioning participants in this. I want you to experience this firsthand, not secondhand. I want you to know firsthand what it is to be a part of this and to share what I have done and given to you. I want you to know this firsthand. And the term he uses here that is one that can kind of be a little bit confusing is this idea of worthy. So that you would walk in a manner worthy of this. Now, it kind of sounds like I'm trying to earn something in this thing. I'd be doing something worthy of it. Okay? But the term that's used here is one that gives great insight into this. It's a term that describes something having equal value to something else, that balances out. In other words, God has given these great things to us and has done great things for us and desires for us now to live lives that kind of match up to that. Okay, let me give you a visual here. So you'd be a good visual. Come on up. Okay? That's your life dream, right? To be in front of everybody. I know. This is your moment of fame here. Okay? You are now a living example here. I want you to be, are you familiar with balance scales, what those look like? Okay? You know, where you... Okay, this is good. You're a good model here. Okay? So you know what a balance scale is? You've got this thing here, and it kind of does this. Okay? And on each side, you put something on a certain here, you know, some weight here, and it tips it like this. And then if you want to find out, you know, what is of equal weight, you put something over here, and then it kind of balances up like this. Okay, now this is good. This is a good exercise, too. The word picture that is here is that God has done this incredible stuff for us. I mean, in giving his son and giving all of this amazing, you know, his promises and wealth of his kingdom, and recrafting who we are, all of this is placed here, and it goes shunk, okay? And so what Paul is saying is that the ministry that he is carrying out is designed, that's, you're doing good, hang on. He calls us to live a life that is of equal corresponding weight to it. That live a life that matches up to what God has actually done and what he's given to us. Good job. Thank you. You're good. Okay. The idea, though, is not just simply, okay, here's what you need to do. God did this, now you do this. But rather what's driving this is this idea that God has called us into his kingdom and glory. He's invited us into this and doesn't want us to miss out on anything. Paul, as a spiritual parent, says, I don't want you to miss out on anything. So, he carries out this ministry. He calls, you know, as he writes this letter, he says, let's think back about this here. Remember how it worked? And in the early parts of this, in chapter 1, he describes, you know, in verse, so that you can actually see it there, in verse 5, he starts out talking about, remember how when we came to you and we lived a certain kind of life among you and you watched us and you saw how that worked? And then he says, he goes on in the next verse, says, then you became imitators of us. I mean, you saw how it worked. You kind of did this thing and realized, you know, experienced the truth firsthand. And it became part of you. And now he says, you go on to the next verse, he says, you became examples to everybody. It's moving along here. So that you experienced it firsthand. You became participants in this. God invited us into it, and it happened there. then he goes on to describe in the next chapter how that actually, it fleshes it out more. How did this work? And he starts out by saying, we came to you and we kind of had this mothering ministry with you. See that in verse, what is it? Verses 7 and 8. It says, we came and we loved you like a mother loves her own children. They went, we loved you. We had this gentleness and this tenderness and this affection for you that only a mother gives. I mean, there's a certain kind of love a mother has that dads just never get. You know? And it's that kind of thing where, when a child gets hurt, what does a mother do? You know, it's going to be okay, you know. A mother feels for that. There's that emotion that goes with that. What does the dad do? You'll be okay. Come on, yeah. Let's go. Okay. You know, but you need both. Okay. I mean, you don't want to just sit there and become kind of groaning yourself and say, "Oh, I hurt again." I mean, you need both. You know. Okay. But there's that kind of thing. He said that we came to you. And we had kind of this ministry that was like a mother to you. We loved you. We not only gave you the gospel, he said, but we gave you our very lives. We were willing to lay it down for you because we loved you that much. And then he talks a bit about putting out this credible example in front of them. In verse 10 there, he says, you know, as you looked at our lives, you know what kind of people we were. And uses some terms that kind of sound a little bit churchy and maybe not too appealing necessarily to some. He says, you know how how devoutly and uprightly and blamelessly we behaved among you. Now, devout, upright, and blameless may not be words that you think, you know, hey, that's, I'd sure like to be known for that. I'd love people for me to think of me as a devout person. And upright and blameless. But, you know, let me recraft these words a little bit. When it talks about being devout, the term that's used there is a word that captures can be captured kind of this way. It's like being convinced of something so much that you're committed to it. Being convinced, you're not still playing around in your mind, not sure if I believe this or not, but you're so absolutely convinced of something that you become committed to it. That's the idea of being devout. Now it starts to look pretty cool, okay? I'm not playing around, I'm really convinced of this thing. The next term that's used there, that term upright, is a word that, if the first one has to do with being convinced of it, this one probably is being conscious of truth, okay? So conscious of it, you know, you're convinced of it, but then so conscious of it that it determines all your decisions that you make. I'm convinced of it, and I'm conscious of it all the time. I'm thinking about this so that I choose to do certain things accordingly. And the term that's captured here with that is upright. And then the last word that he puts in there is the word blameless. And that's the idea of being consistent, without contradiction. In other words, it's not just a little flash thing, I do this on Sunday morning or in youth group or whatever like that, but rather, this is a consistent thing. You look at my life, and as you put these together, here's someone who is convinced of this and therefore is operating a certain way. They're conscious of the truth, and so they're making decisions a certain way. And they're consistent with it. You look at their life, and this is just playing itself out day after day, consistently, and you look at that, and you go, that's what I want. That's the kind of life, he said, we lived among you. And then it comes down to this. He says, then we had this ministry, not just as a mother, but we had this ministry that was like a father loving his own children. And that brings us into kind of the picture of today here. We had a ministry to you that was like a father loving his children. And the way he describes that here is that idea of not simply wanting you to be aware of what's going on, but making sure that you become firsthand participants in the truth. Because you see, this is the key thing here. That unless I experience the truth firsthand, I am stuck living a secondhand life. Think about that for a moment. Unless I experience the truth firsthand, in other words, I am actually there and live it and experience this thing in reality, unless I experience the truth firsthand, I am stuck living a secondhand life. And many believers I know live simply secondhand lives. In other words, they're surrounded by other people who live it. I mean, they know others. They've read the stories. They sing about it. They may talk about it, analyze it, see it in the Bible, but they've never been there themselves. And so they're living a secondhand life. One step short of actually stepping in and being a participant in this kingdom and glory that God calls us to. Now, look at how that worked. Okay, this is verse 11. It says, now you know how we came to you. It says, just as you know how we were exhorting and encouraging and imploring each one of you, just as a father would his own children. Now, I don't know if those words match up with the words that you've got, but there are three words that are used there. That describe how he went about carrying out this fathering ministry with these believers. The first word that he uses is the word exhort. And that's a pretty biblical word. Exhorting you. And, you know, this may be a word that you've heard of this one before. You've maybe done some study on it and so on. It's a word that means to call someone alongside. Kind of challenge someone to do it. You can see kind of the fathery nature of this thing. He's saying, okay, as a father, I wasn't willing to let you just sit there and kind of wander through life, kind of sauntering along in your spiritual life, or maybe sitting on the side and watching others walk along. Said, no. Instead, I'm calling you to come alongside me and run with me on this thing. I'm going to set the pace for it, and you're going to run with me on it. I'm not going to be willing to just let you sit there. Okay? Now let me give you a picture for this. Let's have some fun with this. I enjoy running. Anybody as a runner in here? You're a runner? Okay, you're a runner? Okay. If you're not a runner, you won't quite get it as much as those who do run. But okay, this brings you into my world here. I run for exercise. I don't run in competitions. And I'm a very non-social runner. In other words, I don't like to run with anybody. Because when you run with somebody, for one thing, you have to run their pace, you know, at the speed they run at. And I don't want to run at somebody else's speed. I never did get the idea of talking and running at the same time. You know, and so when you run with people, inevitably they want to talk. And it just doesn't work. You know, I'm trying to breathe, you know, and they want to talk. And I can't, you know, so I just don't do that well. And so I don't want to do that. And I like to use the time just kind of get into my own thoughts and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm a very non-social runner. In fact, you know, if I'm running out where I know there's going to be other people, you know, sometimes I'll be very incognito. In that I'll wear glasses and a hat and I'll look down. I won't acknowledge anyone. In fact, I was running. One of the places I would run is out on Sawyer Camp Trail, which is along all the reservoirs there, coming up the peninsula. Beautiful place to run, but there's a lot of people out there. And so when I would run out there, I would intentionally just not look at anybody. Okay, and so even then, when people would see me and they go hi, I just, you know, didn't want to acknowledge it because I didn't want to have to stop and talk with them, you know. Or that kind of thing. I mean, this is probably letting you know things you don't really want to know about me, but that kind of thing. And then also there's this thing that has kind of increased inside me as years have gone by, and that is that, you know, the older I get, the more I kind of have to prove myself. And so when I'm running, one of the things I enjoy doing, if there's other people out there, is that I'll run along, and when I come up behind somebody, you know, I kind of pace myself with them for a little while, and then I move over to the side and I go into passing gear. So you run along, and boom, run right by them. You know, and it's fun to do because almost without exception, they'll just stop because you just go zonk in it. what I love to do is when it's somebody half my age, just blow them away. Yeah. You know, I'm a dad. You know, watch this. You know, so that sets the stage. Running out here on Surya Camp Trail, one of the reasons I like doing it is flat, because I don't like hills. I don't want anything that really challenges me. And it's also marked off every half mile, so I know exactly how far I've run, and I like, you know, 4 miles. So I run out to the 2 mile mark, turn around, and run back. Okay, and it's nice. There was a day I was running out there, and I was approaching the turnaround point at the 2 mile mark. And as I'm approaching it, this guy was coming running from, and it's like 12 miles long. So, I mean, I don't know where he was coming from, but he was way out, and he had come running in. And so I see this guy come running toward me, and just one of these guys that's put together perfectly the way nobody should be. You know, it's kind of a cross between a Navy SEAL and a Greek god. You know, gosh. You know, I mean, just running, you know, effortlessly, and, you know, like this, and had all the designer clothes, and, you know, perfectly put, kind of this Polynesian kind of complexion and coloring, every muscle perfectly marked out, you know, and I mean, it just makes you sick, you know. But, you know, and he's running, and he's hardly breathing, you know. It's just kind of just, you know. Okay, yeah, whatever, you know. And so I make my turnaround, I come running back. And as I'm running, I realize something. I'm catching the Greek god. I'm actually running faster than him. And so I'm coming up behind him. I'm thinking, this is the ultimate. You know, I mean, it's one thing to pass somebody that, you know, that, you know, they're struggling to run anyway, but this is a real trophy, you know. So I come running up behind him, and you know the routine, right? Okay, come run up behind, I get ready, move over to the side, passing gear. Pow! Yes! And I run by. Now, part of the deal is you listen. Until the steps get far enough back there that you can slow down again. Because that's the only way it works. I mean, you have to run long enough to where they slow down, and then you know, or they're far enough back, and then you can slow down. Okay. So as I'm doing this, I'm listening. And he's right there. What has happened is he has now matched my pace. And I'm stuck in passing gear. You know, he's right there. I'm running. Come on. You know. And then it gets worse. Because then he comes running up alongside me. His name's Leo. Guess how I know this answer. Leo comes running up alongside me, and as he's running, he's saying, got a pretty good pace going there, huh? Yeah. Mind if I run with you on the way back? Now, you kind of step off to the side, and if I'm thinking clearly, there is an answer to this, which is, yes, I do mind. No, you can't run with me. I don't run with people. But here's what happens. Sure! I don't know what I was thinking. There's still 2 miles to go. I have never run this fast for this distance. And now I've just committed myself not only to run with this guy, but this guy talks like we're sitting on a park somewhere. You know? So, where do you live? You know, what's going on? What have you been, And he goes on and on. All, and I'm trying to think of one-word answers to everything he says. Because that's all I can handle is one-word answers. You know, if I can say yes or no or whatever, you know, then it works, you know. But we're doing this thing all the way, and it's just going nuts, you know. I'm sweating. I'm dying. I'm thinking, you know, I'm not going to make it. I'm going to collapse somewhere on the road. You know, and people will come by and say, look what happened here. I made it, by the way. I mean, you just need to know. Those of you who are the mothering kind, you know, I did make it, and I was okay. But there's something that has, you know, got locked in my mind, you know, forever with that. That idea of, you know, it captured this word of bringing someone alongside and running with them. And it taught me something about that at that moment. Those moments. That for one thing, I found that I had something in me that I didn't know I had when I let this guy run with me. I didn't know I could do that. I set a, you know, my own personal record, which I had never gone back to try and duplicate. But also this idea of having someone else come alongside and setting the pace for them, even though it was a challenge for me. Setting a pace. And he was so appreciative afterwards. Thank you for doing that. Of course, my response is, oh, sure. I need to sit down. But we all need people in our lives that set a pace for us, who have that fathering ministry with us, that call us alongside them, invite us alongside them, and say, run with me. And ramp this up. So that we're not just in this thing as a casual thing, but we're in it, like Paul says, to win the race. That there is something at stake here, and we need those alongside us who carry out that fathering ministry of saying, run with me. I want to set a pace faster than you're normally going to do, and I want to call you into something bigger than this, invite you into so you experience it firsthand. Now, there's two sides to this. It's not just that we need that in our life, but that's also something that each of us are called to do with each other. To be those who actually come alongside each other and call each other to a different pace. So we're having this ministry to each other of bringing each other into this environment where we experience the truth firsthand. Because unless you experience the truth firsthand, you're stuck living a secondhand life. Second word he uses here to describe his ministry of activating, his fathering ministry, is the word encouraging. He says, you know how we're exhorting you, okay, calling you alongside to run with us, but also we were encouraging you. And you know, the term that Paul used here is very similar to the word that's used here in Greek as far as what it captures. It's the idea of speaking in such a way that actually speaks courage into someone else. That it actually speaks into someone that boldness, that willingness to risk and rethink things and kind of get inflated again inside that, okay, yes, I can do this. That's part of a fathering role of speaking that way into others. We need that. We need people to say, you know, let's think through this again. Let me tell you again what God has done. Let me tell you again who you are in Him. And we need to be reminded over and over again about this kind of thing. I have a friend who's a neat father. Has some little girls, just loves them. And I had lunch with him back a ways, and he was talking about one of his concerns, and that is that, you know, his oldest daughter, who is in the earliest years of school, she's encountering what happens in school. You know, those early grades when life gets kind of chewy. You know, I mean, it never changes. It's just more blatant then. You know, where life can be pretty, you know, even your friends can be pretty hard on you. You know, calling attention to all the things that are different about you. so that they feel better about themselves. You know, your ears are too big. You know, you're, I don't like your the way you dress, or you're funny, and anything. You know, and kind of, you know, and little girls, I think, are worse than little boys at this. I mean, little boys, I mean, they just, if they don't like each other, what do they do? And it's over. Okay? Okay? Little girls? It's much more subtle and devious. Hmm? Isn't that right? It is? That's it. I've got agreement up here. Nobody likes you. I mean, it's that kind of stuff that it's just, I mean, what do you do with that? And his daughter, you know, would encounter that kind of stuff. I mean, maybe she did it too, but I mean, she would encounter this kind of thing and come home totally deflated, in tears, you know, crying over friends that had said stuff and all that kind of stuff. And as this friend of mine was talking about, he said, you know what really gets me? Not that these friends do that. I mean, that's just life. You'll have that all the way to your, you know, 97 years old. Okay? It never changes. What gets me, he said, is that she's willing to believe them more than me. When I tell her that she is loved and that she is beautiful and that she is the most amazing person on earth and that she has all these talents and that I, you know, that she's wonderful exactly the way she is, she's willing to believe her friends more than she believes me about it. So I've got this way of dealing with it. And that's when I see her come home that way. We've got this little thing, we've been doing it, and yet it never gets old. When she comes home that way, I just tell her, you know, I've got a secret for you. Now, what, you know what that does? I mean, what is it, Daddy? And he says, well, I'll tell you later. You know, and it's a game they're playing, you know. No, tell me now. No, I'll tell you later. You know. And then, you know, they go a little bit longer and say, tell me now, what's the secret? No, a little bit later. You know, and you kind of build this thing up. And again, it's a game they're playing, okay. They know how it's going to work out. But then as you get more into the evening, he'll say, come here. And he'll gather her into his arms and he'll whisper into her ear. And he'll say something like this. He'll say, you know, I love you. I love you exactly the way you are. I wouldn't change anything about you. You are the most creative person I know on earth. I was watching you today. I saw that picture that you drew. I love it. You're an amazing artist. I was watching what happened today as you came into the room, and the whole room lit up because you were there. I love you exactly the way you are. Don't ever change. Now, you can imagine what goes on inside her head when she hears that. You know, what was crushed in it fills back out again. We all long to hear those kinds of words. We all do. We long to hear someone tell us something other than what the world around us, you know, they get beat up all over the place out there. But to have someone say, hey, let's go back. Let's talk about the way it really is. Let me remind you again of who you really are and what God has done and this kingdom he's called you into. Let's talk about realities, the way it really is. Let's go back and kind of sort it out again. And in doing so, infuse some of this courage and boldness to move on again. Paul says, when we came to you, we were exhorting, calling you to run alongside us. We were encouraging you. We were speaking into the very core of your soul what you needed to hear that would create the courage and the boldness there to move forward. And then the third word he uses here. is the word imploring is the way it's translated in my Bible here. I don't know what you get. It's a word that is, it's connected to the term we use for witnessing, okay? Which may not help in describing it. It's a word, the idea is presenting evidence to someone. Proof. This is the way it is. A first-hand account saying, this is the way it is. Let me show you. Okay? But it's more than that. It's presenting evidence and then demanding a response to it. This is the way it is. Here's the proof. Look at my life. Here it is. Now, because it's true, I'm expecting you to respond too. Okay? Not just file it away and say, oh, cool. But rather, I'm going to show you how to do it. Now you do it. Remember when you were learning to drive? Well, I don't know who it was that taught you to drive. Maybe it was your dad. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. But whoever it was, probably when you were first learning, okay? When you're first learning, someone, probably showed you how to do it. Okay, now this pedal does this. This one does this. Don't confuse them. Okay? And you kind of went through the things and someone probably showed you how to do it and then said, okay, now you do it. Okay? And you got behind and they'd say, no. Okay, now try it again. And particularly, did you ever learn, how many of you learned early on to use a stick, with the clutch and all that? Yeah, remember what that was like? Oh, baby. Yeah. Okay. That's a fun experience. I can remember, I can remember teaching my kids, how to do that, to drive a stick. And we lived in Belmont, where there's not a flat street anywhere. It's one thing to learn on a flat street, but then, part of what you had to teach them to do was, you stop on one of these hills that's like this at the stop sign. So, okay, now do it. down we go. Okay. break. Okay. But it's still that, you show and then say, okay, now you do it. I'll give you evidence that it works. Okay, I'm going to show you how it works. I'll give you the evidence, but now it's your turn. You do it. And that's what he was doing. Giving the evidence. I want to give you a first-hand account. I'm going to show you. I'm going to prove that it works this way. But now I want you to do it. So you put these pieces together here. And here's what he's saying. He said, what we were doing was we came and we knew that until you experience the truth firsthand, you're going to live a second-hand life. And as a spiritual father, I was not willing to let you do that. I don't want you to miss anything. I don't want you to come up short. I don't want you to be one who is spiritually dysfunctional. God calls us into this amazing thing, His very own kingdom and glory, to be firsthand participants, to know it firsthand, to live a firsthand life. So Paul says, here's how we're going to do this thing. I want you to run with me on it, because that's where you're going to experience it. No dawdling around, no sitting around. You're going to run with me. Okay, I'm going to set the pace. Secondly, I'm going to speak, he said, you saw how we did this. We speak truth into you. Not just information, but reminding you again and again of who you are and what God has done and what that means, how it plays out. So that you're reminded of the realities of things when the world beats you up. And third, I'm going to show you how to do it, and then you're going to do it. We'll go side by side with this thing. Each of us, we need people in our lives that do this for us. It's crucial. Not just so that we become obedient believers, good children, but so that we experience the truth firsthand. So that we live firsthand lives. We need people that do that, but then we also need to be those who, when we gather, do like what the Scriptures say, stimulate one another to love and good deeds. That's what this is. Where we're challenging each other, run with me. Because I know that when I run with you, I'll run faster. And I'll speak these words of encouragement to you because I know that when I do, they remind me of the same thing, and it cycles back into my own head, and I'm reminded of truth. And I will also be one who will model this in front of you, so that as I'm doing that, I myself am again going to that place of a firsthand encounter with truth. So that together we are living lives that are worthy, balancing, worthy of the God who invites us into His very own kingdom and glory. The Father who invites us. Let's pray together. Father, we are thankful for the privilege of being here today. Father, we do thank you for the privilege of having a day set aside that we honor fathers. And Father, in doing so today, we desire to do so in a manner that really calls all of us into that fathering ministry with each other. One that we call each other alongside each other to run together, and that we speak words that encourage and embolden and challenge each other. And that together we explore the realities of what you've invited us into. So that together we experience the truth firsthand and live lives that are firsthand lives. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.